This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
The first time I think I remember noticing that I was pulling out my hair was probably around 12 years old. And I kept it a secret from everyone for about 20 years. And people knew that I had bald spots. My mom took me to the dermatologist. They diagnosed me with alopecia areata, a medical condition, and I just kind of ran with that. And my grandpa actually had alopecia areata. And so nobody really questioned it. And so when anybody asked me about my spots, I just said like, oh yeah, I've got this medical condition. And then finally, I came out about it and very, very cautiously started telling people I truly thought that I was crazy. I remember telling a friend, and after I explained it to her, I asked her, like, do you think I'm crazy? And she was like, no. And I certainly felt crazy at the time. So I went on to learn what I could about it. Thankfully, TLC was a resource. I attended my first conference. That was so amazing, being in the presence of other people. And I just remember sitting there at that table having dinner with other people talking about our BFRBs. Like, we would talk about like what city we had flown in, and there was no shame. And it was just like this wonderfully liberating experience to be in the presence of other people who I knew weren't judging me and didn't think I was crazy. After that, I became a physician assistant and went into psychiatry. At this point, I was kind of starting to come into myself. I was in my 30s, but it was, it was a moment of growing up into who I was going to be. Went into psychiatry and started to learn what I could to, try to help other people. I wanted to help myself and figure out what treatment options and all of that. And I also wanted to figure out how to help other people with this exact same thing so that they didn't have to have that process for as long as I did with all the shame and secrecy. And I learned all of that, and it was interesting. Then I knew what tools I should be using, and I still was only using them sometimes. And I remember talking to other therapists who were in a similar position where they were helping clients with BFRBs and having had BFRBs themselves, and them saying the same thing, that there were periods where they were like, yeah, my pulling is worse, or my picking is worse, or my nail biting is worse. And I remember thinking, we've got to be missing something. If the people who are trained to treat this are still finding that it's not working for them all the time, like, we've got to be missing something, which brings me to the second part of what we asked, the coaching. I started digging more for, different answers. And I was really focused in the beginning with, how do I stop this pulling, right? And so that kind of was my gauge of recovery, right? And then thankfully, I got into this phase where I realized, no, recovery is about not having the shame. Recovery is about loving myself anyways. Recovery is about, relationships and community and all of that. And so I was able to make that shift. And that was helpful, but I was still pulling my hair a lot. And then I feel like I had another growth moment where I realized that these behaviors are, I knew that they were just regulation tools before. Like, I had heard people say that, and I'd heard people say that they were messages, but it didn't really sink in. And then finally, I got to a point where it sank in, and I was like, wait a minute, if this is a regulation tool, let me figure out why I'm dysregulated and let me address those things, right? Let me strengthen my boundaries and speak my truth and give myself permission to rest and relax and recharge when I need to. And that's where I'm at right now. And I feel like it's just a really good place. I've been through many different stages, and each one I'm like, oh shoot, I didn't know this next one existed when I was back there, right? And so with the coaching, I'm trying to help people identify, okay, well, let's decrease the shame, right? It's just here to help you, really. That's hard to hear when we're at odds with it so much, but it's just here to help you. It's just here to signal that you've gotten out of balance and help you regain that balance. If that's not how you want to be rebalancing, well, let's find other tools to rebalance. So that's my progression of my own BFRB, and then how I kind of stumbled across, honestly, these other tools. And now I'm trying to share these other tools with other people.
Thank you so much. And I have other questions that I will get back to, but the one that I feel is important I want to ask you now is I recently received the same question from somebody in a support group that said, how can you accept this? It feels to me like giving up. And I would love to hear your mindset. I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so that is such a great question. And I think kind of the root of this question is that people often confuse acceptance with complacency. So often they're like, well, if I accept it, then I don't have that drive to change it. And I'm really big on acceptance is about being okay right now. It doesn't have to be different right now. I pull my hair right now and that is okay. And I want to develop other skills to regulate differently, but that's where I'm at right now. Whereas where people get stuck is that they say, I can't be a hair puller right now. I can't be dealing with these urges right now. This can't be part of my identity right now. And that is lack of acceptance.
And I think too, like what you mentioned about complacency and giving up, like people will say to me, oh, you talk a lot about self-acceptance. Like, I'm scared of that, but like, do you manage it? And I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. Like, are you not seeing that stuff that I'm posting? Like, I am very much actively managing it. The only differences between before how I used to and now is that I'm not looking for the cure. I'm looking for what will work right now or maybe for a few days. And I also don't feel bad about it anymore. That's the big thing, I think.
I agree. I think the biggest piece is that not feeling bad about it. And I've often said my recovery is not about how much hair I don't have or how much hair I have. It's not about how much I'm pulling or not pulling. My recovery is largely based in I don't have that shame, and I'm not carrying around that toxic shame inside of me, that fear that if other people knew the real me and knew the things I did when I'm in a room alone, that they wouldn't accept me and love me. And that is what I think BFRB recovery is not having that fear that other people won't accept us if they knew about it.
How did you, or can you explain to us or kind of walk us through maybe that transition of having that toxic shame into where you are now?
Honestly, I think it was a bit of a, I think I really felt like I was giving up at the time when I transitioned into acceptance. I remember I got to a point where I was just fighting it so much and it was taking so much energy and I was trying to wear hats, but then I would just take the hats off and I was just trying everything. I was wearing gloves in the car, which was really uncomfortable for me. And it was just this huge fight. And I remember thinking like, give up. I can't do this fight anymore. Like, this is just exhausting. I can't live my life and do this fight at the same time. And so I think at the beginning, it felt like giving up. And then I realized later that no, it was just acceptance. I was saying, I'm putting down the struggle right now, and I'm not going to carry the distress about it. The behavior is there, but I'm not going to carry the distress about it. I'm going to be kind to myself. I think that's another huge part of acceptance. So often we go through these pulling sprees or these picking sprees, and I even see people all the time post in Facebook groups, "Oh my gosh, I did it again. I hate this. I can't stand myself. Why?" Right? And they really like berate themselves. And so I think kindness is key to this, where we talk to ourselves like we would talk to a friend. Most of the time we talk to ourselves. Many people talk to themselves. Like you would never in a million years talk to another person, right? If you knew somebody else's trick and they said, "Oh my gosh, I had this pulling spree," you would never be like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. You had so many days of not right." We would never do that. And so, how do we talk to ourselves the way that we would talk to a friend? After I pull, how can I say, it must have been a rough day. You must have been really struggling if you felt like you needed to rely on that tool. And it's gonna be okay.
I felt very similar to you, where I'm like, I'm tired of this. And One of the things too was that not only am I tired of fighting this, hating me because of this, I also noticed that that wasn't helping my behavior. Like, honestly, it was
Right.
kind of making it worse.
Absolutely. And so, like, that's such an important point because that's one of the things that I often talk to people about, how when we are unkind to ourselves or even downright mean to ourselves, we create more tension. It's no different than somebody standing there next to us saying those things to us. That same tension builds up. And BFRBs are a regulation tool. They try to manage tension. And so when we talk badly to ourselves, we are increasing the tension in our system and we are basically giving the BFRB more work to do. So it really is counterproductive to be angry with ourselves. I understand where it comes from. I understand that there's a part of us that says, well, I have to be mean to myself to give myself the motivation to do it, to stop. But it really is counterproductive. And I think so many people in the community have felt this, that they start on the behavior and then they start, talking badly to themselves and then they just pull more and more. And so I think people regularly feel this cycle, this spiral. And so helping people understand that, well, part of what's fueling the spiral is that negative self-talk. And if we can just be kind to ourselves, that doesn't mean that the urges are going to go away, but it's not going to feel like that same spiral that it feels like when we're angry with ourselves.
Before you learned about trichotillomania and did your research, were there things that you tried to do that lessened your behavior that maybe worked and maybe some that didn't work so well?
So, in the early stages when I was trying to learn, I had fidgets around. Like, I would play with things. I remember trying hats, but then honestly, I would just take the hats off without even noticing it. I would just pop the hat off, and there I would be pulling my hair. And I'm like, oh, when I realized what I was doing, I was like, well, that hat didn't do anything. I remember attaching things to my steering wheel because, like many people in the car, is a really that's one of my risky moments, my risky environments. I remember having a putty in the car. That was a little bit helpful, having like something like that, tying a pipe cleaner to my steering wheel. So there were a lot of things like that that were kind of somewhat helpful. The thing that I stumbled upon that has been the most helpful for me, and this is kind of further along in my journey, was wigs. That has been hands down the most helpful thing for me. It keeps my hands out of my hair, right? I can play with this hair without doing any damage to my hair. And it also, the wig cap, it's kind of for anybody who doesn't wear wigs, it's kind of like tight, not it's snug. It's snug on your head because you don't want it slipping around, right? And there's something about that snugness on my head that feels kind of like a hug for my head and actually decreases urges for me. This is for so many people about that sensory input. And so there's something for my head in particular that snugness provides a bit of that sensory input that decreases it. And the last way that wigs help me is when I do pull with my hair, it doesn't track to my scalp. That's one of my biggest things is that when I'm touching my hair and playing with my hair, when I'm playing with my hair, I feel it at my scalp on a like individual level. And then I'm like, that kind of increases that urge to pull it out. And so with this, I don't feel it on my scalp when I play with this. So wigs have been by far the most helpful tool for me for all those reasons.
When was the first time you got a wig? And then do you have favorites? And have you ever tried different styles? Can you tell me more about your journey with them?
Yes, I have tried different styles. I have a gigantic closet of wigs. I'm a little embarrassed to say how many wigs I have, but I think that's true for many wig wearers. So I do remember when I started wearing wigs. It was right when everything shut down with COVID. We had to, I work in psychiatry, and so I was in like an office setting, and we all went home and we were all doing video visits from home. And I used to be able to leave my office door open in between sessions so that when I was like documenting, typing on the computer, my door would be open. And that was a helpful deterrent, knowing that anybody could walk by in the halls and see me. Well, when I got sent home, then I was in a room by myself all day and my pulling, just like I just pulled and pulled and pulled. I didn't have my deterrent and I didn't have enough time to figure out what else would work for me. I think so much of my life, I've been adaptable trying to figure it out, but the pulling just outpaced my ability to figure out a new strategy to manage it. And so it got to a point where not only was the were the bald spots bad, but I was just like, I need something to help me not just automatically do this, right? So it was a bit about covering up the bald spots, but it was a large part about, I know that this isn't how I want to cope, but there's such an automatic nature to it. How do I block it while looking professional in my work setting? So went out, bought a wig, wasn't a great wig, to be honest. It was, yeah, looking back on it, not a great wig. And I also burned it. I didn't know there was no wig class. I didn't know that you couldn't put heat on synthetic wigs. And so honestly, it started to lose its shape. And I went to curl it to get it back into shape and I fried it. And I was like, okay, what are we doing here? So I learned more about wigs and finally, yes, got into other wigs. There's definitely a learning curve. And I do have a website, Tricked Out Tresses, to give people some guidance on choosing and caring for wigs. My favorite ones, you asked about that. I really like for synthetic wigs, Jon Renau and Beltress are some of my favorites. I feel like those have a good density and they look really good. They hold up really well as far as synthetic wigs go. And then for human hair wigs, Stacked Hair is one of my favorites. Wigs by Tiffany is another favorite. There's also a really new, I shout out to Kylin Collections is the most affordable human hair wig collection that I've come across. And it's really fantastic quality hair and at much better prices than most other, wigs, human hair. So those are some of my top picks.
I had synthetic hair extensions to help like even out the thinness, and I straightened it and it was crinkly. And you know what was funny? It was so crinkly and burnt. It felt like the hair I wanted to pull. So I had to actually cut them or like pull them out because I wanted to feel them the whole time.
Yes, I totally agree. Those crinkly hairs were like, because those are some of my favorites as well. And I know exactly what you're talking about, that burnt hair. Yeah. And I cut it out of mine, but then it was not, I cut too much. Anyways, it was a learning experience. I was going to say it was not a good experience, but that's not true. It was a learning experience.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. I just recently saw a TikTok, someone who is in hair, and they talked about synthetic wigs. And a tip that he gave was to get a dryer sheet and stick your brush, all the prongs of your hairbrush, into this dryer sheet and brush your hair with the dryer sheet with the synthetic wig. And it gives it this like shape, and it's not staticky. It's really nice. You can like manipulate it. I thought, what a cool tip. I wish I had that because I was messing up my synthetic extensions, like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to try that on my synthetic wigs. I've never heard of that tip. That's cool.
Yeah, that's one of the best things, and I would love to hear your opinion on social media. One of the best things I find is that everybody seems to be wearing wigs now, getting their eyebrows done, lash extensions. Like when I was first going through it, only like celebrities would wear hair extensions. I felt like I was standing out and doing things that were a little bit abnormal to the kids around my age. But now it seems so normalized. Everybody's doing these beauty enhancements that I feel like it's really great for our community. There's so many options for us now.
I agree. And one of the things that I love about Stacked Hair that I mentioned, one of those brands, is that most of the wig companies that I know of, they were founded by somebody who had hair loss, and that's kind of how they arrived on this journey. The lady who owns Stacked Hair, Allie Meyer, she just likes wigs, and she's like, I don't need a reason to wear wigs. Like, I just like them. I don't need to lose hair to have better hair than what I started with. So, and I love that mindset. And I often share with people that I wear wigs. If somebody says like, "Oh my gosh, I like your hair or whatever," I'm pretty open about it. I say, "Yeah, I wear wigs." And part of it is I want to decrease shame around it. I don't want it to be that, "Oh my gosh, wigs are these things that only people, with chemotherapy are wearing or only celebrities are wearing." Usually by the time, people say something like they know me, right? And I'm just, "Yeah, I wear wigs." And then I think if you're going to be open about your wigs, you have to be prepared to either, you know, people are going to ask why, right? They're not trying to be nosy. They're just, that's a common next question. And so being prepared to, are you okay with sharing about your trick, which I am. I usually tell people if they do ask, or having kind of a back pocket phrase like, you know, oh, just hair loss, or oh, I'd rather not talk about it, or whatever. But I try to use it as an opportunity to educate and spread awareness and yeah, make it more acceptable to both wear wigs and have trick.
Do you feel like social media positively impacts people's journeys or negatively impacts them?
I think it depends. I think it can do both. I think that there is a tremendous value in knowing that other people are experiencing this and knowing that you are not alone and finding community and learning tips. And I think that all of those things can be invaluable and social media can provide that. I think that social media can also get us stuck with a label that we have applied to ourselves that gets in the way of us trying to change, right? I could very easily say, well, I have trick and I identify with this trick community. And so that's just who I am. That's my identity. Book closed, right? And so I think sometimes I see this as well with ADHD a lot. And I know that there's a lot of co-occurrence between ADHD and BFRBs. I see a lot of people say, like, oh, well, I can't do this because I have ADHD. And it's like, you can. It might be different. You might need different tools. It might be more difficult for you, but let's not let these labels become these barriers that get in our way and tell us that we can't do something. We just have to do it differently. So I think it can go either way. I think that there's absolutely a responsible way to find your people and know that you are not alone and get tips. And then I think if we get too sucked into it and that becomes our identity that we're not willing to let go of, or if we are on social media for hours and hours a day, constantly seeking this reassurance from it, then I think that it becomes a barrier for us.
Did you ever try medication for your own trichotillomania?
I have tried medications for my trich. I've also struggled with depression and in the past anxiety, and I have ADHD. And so I have tried a bajillion medication. That's an exaggeration, but it feels like it's a lot. And I've never come across a medication that's been helpful for my trich. I've tried NAC. I've tried some of the second generation antipsychotics. I tried, you know, SSRIs and SNRIs. Interestingly, duloxetine or Cymbalta, that actually made my pulling worse. Most of them didn't have any effect, but that one actually made it worse for me. So I have tried a bunch of different medications. My current psychiatrist, you know, he suggested naltrexone. By the time I was, you know, at this point with him suggesting it, I was like, I'm just not bothered enough by it to take another pill. Like maybe if it gets worse or it becomes a problem down the road, but right now, like I just, it's not worth another pill. I'm fine with where I'm at with my hair pulling. So that's a, you know, a reasonable treatment for a trick that I haven't tried. So yeah, so I've tried a host of medicines. Some have made it worse. Most of them did nothing for my trick. There are other options out there that I know are available that I haven't tried.
I'm the same way. When I was in high school, around 17, I tried. That was like my first relapse. So, for when I first started, of course, everything was out. We tried all these things. And then when I was in high school, I said, please take, I'll take anything. I don't want this to be back.
Yes.
And I noticed a similar experience where I tried different things like Abilify is a big one I know people in our
Yeah.
community use, and I was on that. And like you, I didn't really notice a positive change, but I am happy that I tried all these things. Although I am like, for me, I don't take any medication for my trich, but it's because I have that background knowledge. I did try already. And so, of course, I'm open to all these things, but people will come to me and say, well, what medication should I take? And I'm thinking, that's not the first step. Try other things
Right.
first, then get there, just like how we did. We tried other things. We're like, we'll try this too, but it shouldn't be, in my opinion, the first step. How do you feel?
I totally agree. And I think even for people who are going to try medications, and that's a perfectly fine idea. I prescribe medications all day long, so I'm not knocking medications. But I think it's important to recognize that for anything that you are taking a medication for, whether it's depression or anxiety or ADHD or trichotillomania, it can't be just the pill. It can't be give me the cure. It really has to be this more well-rounded approach of, okay, how do I use the medication to get me to a place where I'm able to do the work? Right. So I think that medications can be really helpful training wheels, so to speak, to help us kind of get moving, right? But I don't think that they alone can be the answer. And especially for trick, where there are so many limited options, and even the best ones that we have, like NAC has the best track record with like 50% roughly helping people. That means there's another 50% that don't benefit from it. And so I think we really can't bank on there's a medication out there that's going to solve this for me.
Have any of your clients, now I've heard this through the grapevine, just from other people sharing and overhearing at like TLC conferences and stuff like that, where people are now saying that the Ozempic, the GLP-1, those types of medications are not only are they decreasing the like food noise, but also people who are gambling, people who are engaging in our behaviors, they've noticed a decrease. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I've definitely heard about that. And I think that with all the kind of with all of the ruckus about it, I think that there will be some research coming in. I imagine that it works similarly to naltrexone, not on the same receptors, but naltrexone pretty widely can help with any addictive or compulsive behavior. It's approved for opioid use disorder and alcohol use disorder, but I've seen it help for gambling addiction and trick and even sex addiction and the whole gamut of eating behaviors, right? The whole spread of it. And so I imagine that there's something about it where it also globally, those GLP-1 medications also probably globally help with those with that reward center, because that's what it is, right? It's the reward center. It's we latch onto a behavior because we find it very rewarding. And if we can make it less rewarding, then it doesn't have that same pull on us. We don't feel so drawn to it.
Something that I've noticed in my journey, especially after getting to that point of self-acceptance, is that I don't fall into that trick trance for as long or as often as I used to. I feel like I'm very rarely like kind of sucked into that trance. Have you noticed the same thing in your journey?
I really have, and I think that it's just developing awareness. I think that early on in the process, and when I was really even hiding it from everybody else, and I wasn't willing to admit it to myself what an issue it was and how destructive it had been for me. Yes, I think I zoned out, dissociated, looked down, there's this pile of hair. You're like, oh my gosh, how long have I been pulling now? And so one of the things that I think helps me now be in that place where I'm like you, I don't really know, I don't get in those trances anymore. Yes, there are times where I pull a couple of hairs and I'm like, oh, wait, there I go. But it's not like there's a pile of hair on the floor. And I think that's just practicing awareness. Awareness is like a muscle. And a lot of people say, well, I can't notice when I'm doing it. It just takes a lot of practice. It's like going to the gym, right? You wouldn't walk into the gym and have a session or two and say, well, I can't get stronger because it didn't work, right? You know that in that situation, it's going to take time and effort and, sticking with it. And the same thing with developing awareness is that it's going to take time. You really can develop it. It is possible, but it's going to take time and regular practice.
What are your thoughts on pull-free challenges?
I don't subscribe to them. I don't encourage my clients to do that. There's this black or white aspect of it, right? You're either winning or you're losing. And that is just not how life is. It also really ignores the fact that trick has a very important purpose for us. For many people, it's a soothing behavior. And so, if we can't find other tools to soothe, it's like saying, well, we don't deserve to be soothed. We're just going to be pull-free because it's not helpful for us in the big picture. And so I don't encourage pull-free days. The other trap that I think people fall into is that they build up all of these pull-free days. And then they pull, and then they're back to one. And there's something psychologically that tells ourselves when we're back to one on our counter that we have lost all of the progress from that week or month or whatever it is. And that's just not true. We don't lose all of that practice. We don't lose that benefit just by pulling for one day. So I usually don't, if people are going to and they think that it's a helpful motivation tool, okay, go ahead, right? You got to try everything out there. I'm not saying that I haven't had these pull-free, times where I was counting and everything, but where I'm at now and how I understand it, I encourage people to. I don't even tell people with my clients, I don't even say, how do we decrease your pulling? How do we stop your pulling? I don't even do that. I say, How do you want to be coping with stressors? You need a way to cope. Let's set the pulling down for a minute and let's focus on what you want to be doing and how do we introduce that in? And then we'll crowd the pulling out naturally.
I love that. I remember when I started to, how your trichotillomania comes in waves, the severity. So I was in a more severe time and I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to download this app and I'm going to track my days. And I remember subconsciously pulling a hair and I only noticed it once I went to put it on my lips to feel it. And I'm like, oh, and I'm like, well, that doesn't count. So then I started lying to this app. I was like, what am I doing? Then I had to have a realization. What am I doing? I'm lying. I'm like, that one doesn't count. No, that one doesn't count either. And I'm like, this isn't working.
It's shame-based, right? It really is shame-based because you know that in the app or whoever you are in this kind of group with, you know that the right answer is I didn't pull today. And it just doesn't leave any space for like genuine vulnerability of it was a hard day today and I just didn't give myself the support I needed at the start of the day. And man, it was rough. Because what we need then is you're still an amazing person. It's going to be okay. This is just another day in your life, right? You're learning all the time. Like, that's what we need. We don't need something to tell us, oh, you're back at square one.
I noticed that my trichotillomania has changed areas throughout my life. I started with eyebrows and now there's something I'll tug at, but really don't engage at all. Have you noticed your trichotillomania move?
Absolutely. I've had times like these two spots right here are pretty big spots and it kind of bounces like teeter totters back and forth. Like sometimes this side will be worse and sometimes this side will be worse. And I also had a time where I was pulling from right behind my hairline here. It's really interesting. I know a lot of people with trich have the experience of a lot of the hairs grow back white. And so it's actually really interesting because I have this very thin, probably like half an inch line on my hairline that is dark. And then right behind that, I'm like 80% gray slash white. Like it's just really interesting. And my husband thankfully thinks it's like the coolest thing that I'm, it's like this mix of like gray and dark hair. But yes, it's definitely moved around and you can tell by where the most white is in my hair. And I will also say, with that idea of moving around, I think it's really interesting to me that there are some spots that I've never pulled from and that still hurt to pull from. Like the nape of my neck, I'm like, that really hurts. And so I understand, people who don't have trick, how they're like, how can you do that? Because I could never pull from back there. But this spot right behind my front line here, like, yes, if there weren't any consequences, I just pull from there all day long. It doesn't hurt whatsoever. It's very soothing.
Yeah, for some reason, I only pull from the left side of my scalp. Sometimes I'll get like, up in the part or whatever. But I remember actively trying to pull from the right side because I was thinning out the left so much. And I'm like, oh, I can't. It hurts.
Isn't I just think that's so interesting that there are spots that actually hurt and there are other spots where it's very soothing. I mean, the brain is just such a fascinating thing.
I have a friend who pulls out her eyelashes, and she, because I'm so open about it, she knows that when I pull from my scalp, I look for the different textures and stuff. And one day she says, "Hey," she was feeling around in her hair. She's like, "Hey, can you show me the different ones?" I'm like, "No, no way. Why would I do that? No." I'm like, that's all I need is like, now your fingertips know what my fingertips know, and you're already pulling your eyelashes. Forget it. And tell me if this is true for you. Sometimes I look for different roots. So like, of course, I love the one that has like the sheath on it, like the very thick and crinkly hair. But other times I kind of enjoy the pop of the little white bulb at the end. Do you find yourself like craving different ones?
So I don't necessarily crave different ones, but I do have the root as very much part of my process where when I pull out the hair, I pull off the root and if it doesn't have a meaty enough root, there's like it's a bit disappointing, right? Although I will say there was a period of time where I went just white knuckling it went for a couple of months without pulling my hair. And when I started again, I only pulled out the ones that were really easy to pull out, which I don't even know how I navigated that now, but only the ones that didn't really have much of a root. Like that felt okay to me somehow. Like somewhere in my mind, I was like, oh, this one was gonna like fall out anyways. Or like this one wasn't really securely in there. So like it was gonna come out when I brushed my hair anyways. I don't know. I told myself these stories. So I don't have a, you know, that's part of my process is pulling off the root. But at least where I'm at right now, like I don't kind of go for a particular one. I do know that, just kind of talking about the oddities of it though, there's something about the white or silver hairs though that feels just a little bit more rewarding than the darker hairs. I don't know what that's all about, but there it's odd. They're just so pretty to me. Like I pull it and I'm like, such a pretty, like, you know, shade of like silver or white or whatever. So I think that's more my preference than the root is like when I pull a white one, which there are plenty of white ones, I'm like, that's so pretty.
Oh, it like glistens. It's like glittery.
Yes, it is. It's like glitter. Exactly. It's like tinsel. Yes.
Yeah, I found my first gray hair. I've had a few since, but my first one ever, I'm like, oh, immediately take you out, but I kept it. I have it in my bag. Barbara's first gray hair. I'm like, I'm so weird, but I wanted it because I was like so proud of it. And now I have like a little, I saw a little one poking out and you know, every week, and I know you host a support group, so I want to talk about your support group. I want to keep it in and tell my support group people, hey, look, I kept it because
I like that.
it becomes like, oh, great, but I'm leaving it alone.
Absolutely. And sometimes in that kind of, you know, vibe of like I'm leaving it alone, sometimes I'll look at myself in the mirror and I'll see one of the white ones and I will be tempted to pull it out. And something that I've been doing lately is I will like look at that spot in the mirror and I will say, no, you are worth staying on my head. I'm going to leave you alone today. And so there's something about like saying that and putting that intention out there that helps decrease the urge for me. So I love that you're like this one right here. I'm keeping an eye on it. I'm, you know, taking special care of that one.
I'm trying to form an attachment to it so that I don't. I want to take care of it.
And that's with me. When the ones in the mirror call my name, I'm like, I want to take on this like loving attachment with it. And I want to say, like, no, you're worth staying put. Like, you know, I care about you and you can stay. And like I said, that really helps decrease the urge.
I love it. So I know that you host a support group. I believe it's the first Thursday of the month. Is that
Is.
true? Tell us how we
Yes.
can join.
Yeah. So the support group is Pick, Pull, Bite, Finding the Light. And one of the things that I really pride myself on in this support group is that we welcome everybody, regardless of where they're at in their trick journey. So whether they are, you know, of the mindset, I need to stop pulling right now, or whether they're like, I don't know, I just want to cut back, or whether they're like, I have no intention of stopping anytime soon. Everybody is welcome. And I say that because I know that there are some spaces that are very much, you know, we are like focused on stopping, right? That's kind of that's all that's allowed here. And so I like to say that it's really welcome. It's welcoming for anybody wherever you're at your stage. And the link is it's a Zoom link and you can find it on the BFRB Changemakers calendar that's posted. You can also email me at hopeandhealingcoach@gmail.com if you can't find the link and I can send it right out.
Perfect. And then I know you just said your email, but if someone would want to work with you, can you plug your business?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a program called Hack Your Habit, and I'm really excited about this program. It has all of those things that I talked about, where it's kind of like growing and learning more about my trick and figuring out not just how to manage it, but how to really get to the root dysregulation underneath of it and manage that. And so that's what a lot of my program is about, is how do we help you become more aware of the behavior? How do we help you recognize your needs and then meet your needs? How do we help you build a toolbox of strategies? Because life is going to get hard sometimes. It's unrealistic for us to expect that we won't have hard days or we won't have urges. And how do you continue to learn from yourself? And so that's my Hack Your Habit program. And you can check it out on my website, hopeandhealingcoach.com. And so yeah, so that's the program.
And it's been wonderful talking to you. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to share before we wrap up?
I think I want to expand a bit on the self-compassion. We talked about it a little bit, but I just want to stress how incredibly important it is. I don't want it to be one of those things that like just kind of like came up for a minute or two in the podcast. I really want to stress for anybody that's listening to this, if you are not sure what to do next about your BFRB, get support is number one and be compassionate is number two. And that's not a, I don't think either of those are more, higher priority than the other, but those are the two top things. Medications are fine, but that's not the goal, right? Stopping is fine, but that's not the goal. Self-compassion and finding support are huge. And with the self-compassion, I don't think that anybody finds lasting success without self-compassion. You can certainly white knuckle it for a period of time without self-compassion. But I imagine that there aren't many people out there that really truly find lasting success. So I think that is a huge key to success is self-compassion. And I talk to some people who say, well, I don't know how to be compassionate with myself. I've been talking to myself this way my entire life. And my kind of tip for that is ask yourself, what would you say to somebody that you care about in a situation like this, if they were struggling with, they had a hard day or struggled with a habit that they were trying to quit, how would you talk to them? And then say that to yourself. And it's probably going to feel really weird. And that's okay that it feels really weird. Your brain isn't used to doing that. Sit with that weirdness and say that to yourself, anyways. And the more you give yourself that kind of compassion and love and respect, the more comfortable it will feel.
And I feel like for many people, and I'm talking from personal experience as well, finding compassion for my trichotillomania was the biggest hurdle in my life. And because I was able to find that self-compassion and have it and be kind to myself, everything else that I like maybe disliked about myself, it was easier to learn to treat those with love too. It really changes everything.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you brought that up because I really do now, and it took years, decades for me to get to this place, but I really do now think of my BFRB as a friend rather than my enemy. There was a time in my life where it was an enemy and it was ruining my life, and I just needed to get rid of it. I just wanted to cut it out of my life, give me a medication or a strategy to make it go away. And with lots and lots of practice, now I'm able to look at those urges as gentle messages that tell me I've gotten out of balance, even when I might not have recognized that I'm out of balance. And so I'm able to actually have gratitude towards the urges and gratitude towards the pulling because I recognize that the urges are just trying to help me. The pulling is just trying to help me. Kind of think of it like a friend that gives bad advice, right? It's like, I know the intention is good. I'm not going to follow that advice because that's just not what I want, but I know the intention is good. And so I think that, yes, where possible, if we can shift our mindset from, oh my gosh, this trick is so terrible, this thing that I hate about myself, to, okay, well, maybe it's trying to help me. How do I lean in a bit? How do I appreciate that help while knowing that I don't have to follow through with it? And how do I befriend it?
Yeah, that was really a big moment for me, was to try to be friends with it and say, okay, you're not trying to make me this ugly, like, in my head, I'm always saying
Right.
ugly and horrible. You're not trying to do those things. I know that you're not. What are you trying to show me? And then you're able to, everything changes. Your whole lens, everything
It really
changes.
does. It really does. And so often people ask themselves, who could I have been without my trick? And I ask, well, who would you be without it in a sense of it helped you along the way? Like it helped you cope, it helped you survive. So we can look at who would I be in a better sense because of my BFRB. But truly, we are the people that we are. And our BFRB is with us through our most challenging times. And so it's, I think, my opinion, it's no underestimation to say that it has helped us survive up to this point. How do we respect that? And then how do we say, who can I be with my BFRB? I'm coaching about this now. I'm helping other people with it, right? And so yes, this has been my journey and there's been a lot of pain along my journey, but I wouldn't know all the things that I know about it now if I hadn't lived it myself. And even in psychiatry, I couldn't show up for people the way that I do if I hadn't had this experience myself. I could still learn the book stuff to help them, but like that's not the same.
Yes, and too, I like to think to myself, Well, I've gotten everything I wanted with this thing. Let's keep
Yeah.
going, you know? Like,
Yes.
I have
Yeah.
everything I want.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to get in your way. It really doesn't. It might feel like it, and I understand where that comes from. But for anybody who thinks like this is stopping me, maybe ask yourself, like, is that true? Is it really stopping you? Because it doesn't have to.
Thank you.